The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
I mentioned earlier on the issue yesterday at the Leinster semi-final between Kilkenny and Dublin in Camogie, where the both teams ran on to the pitch wearing shorts and jerseys and were told they had to go back and change into skorts. This is the short and skirt combo, or the match would not go ahead. Texts say, I'm 100% behind the Camogie players. Let them wear shorts if that's what they want, but they need to be firm and unmovable in their protests. All teams should agree to take the field in shorts, and if the association decides to call off a number of games, it is the association that'll come off worse. The public are not crying out for skorts. I'm willing to bet they would back the players in a standoff, and it finishes, be firm, ladies. 53106 at a cost of 30 cent or 087-1400-106. We will come back to skorts later on. Other issues before that, I'm joined by John Cunningham, Relationship Director at Morgan McKinley, Kate O'Connell, former Fine Gael TD, and Conor Faulkner, consultant with the Royal Irish Automobile Club. And before the break, Lynn Boylan and I were discussing the challenges in respect of one aspect of housing, which is data centres soaking up connections that might otherwise go to housing. And housing is all over the papers, particularly the new housing authority and the attempt to get somebody to run it. Kate O'Connell, looking back at the week that was, a lot of the analysis is using the phrase self-inflicted. Whose fault? Who do you regard as culpable for this? And could it have been avoided?
I think it looks like it's definitely been pushed towards James Brown anyway. And it looks as though he's going to be made the fall guy. There seems to be a little bit of political opportunism emerging within the coalition. As when you have a fella down, maybe finish him off. And I think he will ultimately be the person who suffers the most out of this. He's a distancing of Fine Gael from the decision-making process. But also, interestingly, maybe it's because Fine Gael are so long in the driving seat or so long in government, but there seems to be almost a recognition within the Fine Gael party that this is a busted flush and quit while you're ahead. Whereas James
Brown...
The
whole agency or the CEO?
This idea, this notion of a side. That's what I'm reading from the papers, that this is perhaps getting huge pushback from Fine Gael. And I think we may be falling into the category of lessons learned. They may know that this does not wash with the public. I think people were very suspicious of putting in this layer under a minister, especially with the run into government formation. Like, the job of the minister, to my mind, is to implement policy, but also to run a department like a CEO, not like a business, but like the CEO of that government department. And by putting in this layer, it's reminiscent of the HSC and all of that. And people, I think, the public are allergic to that. I'm surprised that James Brown is reporting the paper is doubling down on it and is considering, you know, other names in the mix. But I don't think this is going anywhere. I think, in general, the coalition will suffer from the figures put out during the election, if they weren't reflective of reality. You know, this is the defining thing for the government. It was the top thing on the voters' list of questions during the election, and they need to deliver now.
And the opposition has been making inroads into the position itself, not just who would get it and what the salary would be. This thing of the notion of it being a job share with the minister seems to be getting some traction.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, what we've seen the last week is just a shambles, really, from the government. That, you know, they're saying, as said, housing is their priority, but they can't even agree on what the housing activation unit would do, what powers they would have. They're saying that they, you know, it wasn't agreed that the head of NAMA would have it. But yes, you know, there's no way that someone was going to be seconded from NAMA without Pascal O'Donoghue knowing about that in advance. The tarnisher clearly doesn't read the newspapers, doesn't listen to the radio, is completely living in a TikTok world where this doesn't filter in. So it is shambolic what we've seen in the last week. But the problem is that people who are listening to at home today on Sunday morning and in the polls, housing is still the number one critical issue. There's still thousands of people. We have, you know, 15,000 people homeless. We have people who are, you know, renting over 55 who, you know, are really worried about their future. So this is a real life problem for people, and they're looking for the government to get their act together, and they can't even agree on what this unit would do or who's going to head it up.
Well, whatever about who heads it up, is there not a certain compelling logic to the unit itself, John? I mean, the kind of issues even that Lynn was talking about earlier on with things like connectivity to the grid. There's water connectivity, there's ESB connectivity, there's planning matters, there's delivery of a whole series of different government departments. Is that not made quicker if there's somebody driving all that?
Okay, it fundamentally feels like an Irish solution to an Irish problem. Brendan McDonagh, by the way, was an extraordinary chief executive at the NAM and did a brilliant job, right? If Brendan McDonagh at 430,000 could fix this, it'd pay him 4 million a year. What's going to happen now is they'll spend 10 million on consultants coming in. But back to the point, why would you think we need to bring somebody in from the outside back in on top of all the infrastructure? My understanding is there's fundamentally a problem within the departments where senior civil servants do not get on, they don't communicate, and they compete against each other. And that's what the problem
is. And is that not the argument to bring somebody in to quote, knock heads?
This is my point. The reason they're bringing them in is because they're unable to work together. So it sounds like it is the only solution that's there. And to me, Brendan McDonagh, anybody I know who knows him or has worked with him, this is the kind of guy who gets things done. So from my point of view, the issue of rambling around salaries, they're now talking about, well, he'd be better off, we'd look for somebody between 100 and 200. This is where we go down rabbit holes. We need to start comparing these people's salaries to the partners in large consulting firms or whatever else. If Brendan McDonagh could do the job, I think it would have been a brilliant appointment and he might have stopped the logjam and knocked the heads together. The bottom line is those senior civil servants, they can't be fired, they can't even be chastised.
Lynn, you look sceptical.
I am sceptical because I think it's a distraction. The McDonagh is a complete distraction. The Housing Czar is a complete distraction. The Housing Commission, the experts, the people who are delivering houses in this country, were asked to go away and do an independent report by the former Minister for Housing, Darragh O'Brien, who failed to meet with them even. They were very clear in what they thought this activation unit, this body should be. It is getting the people who are involved in delivering houses. So that is the developer builders. It is the people who deliver the utilities, the regulated Irish Water, the Air Grid, all of these people into a room and to prioritise and to have emergency powers to be able to crack open the blockages. So for example, if you have a substation in Castlebaggot and you have developers who have planning permission for houses and you have data centres, that you're saying we are prioritising the housing that needs to happen, or if Irish Water are doing an upgrade in, for example, Leixlip, but the housing is being built in Lucan at the time, say to Irish Water,
we need, for what the government is trying to do though.
No, because the Housing Commission were really specific. It's that round table, getting these people into the room together, but giving them the emergency powers to actually do something. Whereas what we were getting is we were seconding someone in on a salary twice what the minister's salary is, not giving them any lit powers, so they'll still be subordinate to the minister. And nobody from government has been able to say what they envisioned this unit to do. Whereas if they read the Housing Commission report, it was very clear what the people who are in the business of delivering houses were saying needs to happen.
If we go back to a similar crisis, and this is within your bailiwick, Connor, back in the day where we had a major problem with road safety, the Road Safety Authority took over from the National Safety Council and was given the task of getting together with Gardaí, with Department of Transport, with NTA, with all of the agencies involved. It didn't have particular powers executively, but it did manage to create a significant shift. Is this not the same thing?
Well, it's an interesting parallel because that was Ireland's big crisis at the time, 20 years ago. Road safety in Ireland was a disaster. We were a relative basket case way down the European league table versus peers. And we really got our act together. But in relative terms, that was easy for a couple of reasons. Firstly, it had huge political support. There was near universal acceptance that we had to do something about it. Secondly, we had a toolkit. We could just copy what the Brits were doing, the Dutch, the Swedes. So we brought in things like a dedicated traffic corps, a national car test, a graduated license, all the stuff we're familiar with now. And we started policing properly. And lo and behold, you know, we painted by numbers, followed those policies and everything improved. Housing is a bigger problem, perhaps. But the thing that frustrates me, not having the depth of expertise of Lynn, for example, or others who've been looking at this, but if you weren't told by government that it was a crisis, you would see bugger all evidence on the streets that there's any sort of crisis actions taking place. You can walk through, I mean, my involvement with the RAAC, we have a very large property on Dawson Street in central Dublin. It's enormous and it's empty. But all through central Dublin and the towns around the country, just look above the shops. There's 3-4 floors. When I moved out of home at, 19 years of age, I moved into a bedsit in Ranelagh. Probably a modern disaster, but I was able to afford it while doing a false course and working in Abracadabra. and off to start my life. And at the moment, we could accommodate if we stop letting perfect be the enemy of good, stop imposing ridiculous rules on, try and refurbish the space above your shop so you can let it as two apartments. The local authority will compel you to spend £500,000, £1,000,000 on ludicrously unrealistic safety standards, build your own fire escape, get planning permission for this. It becomes completely impossible. So they sit there and moulder and crumble. And yes, you read in the newspaper that, you know, the government is pulling out all the stops to address the housing emergency. It's depressing to look at.
A text to say, just get the Minister for Housing to do his job and stop using McDonough as a shield. 53106 if you want to get in touch. Kate O'Connell, do you get the sense that this fits in a bigger category of us, for some reason in modern Ireland, despite being the richest we have ever been, becoming largely incapable of getting large infrastructure and major stuff done?
Yeah, to some extent. Despite the inaccurate figures at the time of the last election, the trajectory was correct. But Conor's right. I mean, this idea of listed buildings, you just drive in from the canal to here in town today. You look above Camden Street, there's three layers. Most of those buildings, I know by looking at them at this stage, they're listed. They have no fire safety in place for people to live in it. There would need to be a fire barrier between the retail layer and the next layer. That's huge money. You're not making your money back as a person, whoever you are, a landlord or someone who owns the retail unit underneath. And then the loss of the bed sits for that generation of people that are pre-family or pre-individual living circumstances. But there seems to be a blockage when it comes to delivering affordable housing. What my major issue with this is, at this stage, this is embedded in our society. I know that there is, it's a useful correlation with the road safety, but people's lives, they cannot set up home. They cannot have that independent autonomy as adults. It's impacting when people have their families. And it's really disruptive to the fabric of society that if you are somebody that has gone to school and done your FOSS course or done your degree or done whatever, that your wages today will not pay for somewhere for you to set up your home. And that is destructive to society. And it's creating such a gap in terms of who can have a family even. Mm-hmm. And the next generation, you end up with some people being able to afford to have six kids and some people being able to afford to have one kid. It really is so disruptive, and it's going on for nearly two decades.
And it breaks the fundamental social contract. Mm-hmm. And it actually leads to phenomenons like Trump, etc., and the rise of populism, because we are failing this generation.
It fuels racism as well. And to some extent, and I've had this, I've talked to normal people and I nod every day to people's issues in retail. And it's hard to answer a 25-year-old girl who's single, who has no offspring, and she sees in her community somebody coming into the country and getting a house. And I'm not saying that she's more deserving than the person coming in, but for her, it's hard to swallow someone that's going out to work 40 hours a week or 45 hours a week, and they will never get a house. And that is, to my mind, fueling the Trumpism, that divide, that racism, that anti-migrant. And you can understand, at the end of the day, most people want to sort out their own lives and get on with their own lives.
But what's depressing about this is a conversation that's actually almost irritating to hear us talking about it again, because it feels like it's not being seen as a crisis. Let's face it, and not to upset Lynn, there are lots of very bright people in government. There are lots of very bright people in the civil service, okay? It is not beyond the wit of these people to come together, you would think, to sort it out. That commission report, which I read, by the way, which was brilliant, and it was clear and concise, why in God's name are they not taking it one by one and implementing it? So to me, you know, there's this fundamental issue, what's the priority? I mean, I sit on the Dublin Chamber Council. If you don't fix water into Dublin in the next 5 years, it doesn't matter how many houses you're going to build, the city's going to grind to a halt, okay? So there's some really fundamental infrastructural things. You asked about the inability to do big things. If they don't fix the water and they don't fix energy, we saw what happened in Spain and in Portugal last week, okay? If you don't fix energy and water, it won't matter a damn what legislation has changed with regard to building houses. The place is going to grind to a halt.
Is it worth making the point, sorry, Lynn, that it's not just Ireland. I think sometimes we have this conversation, yeah. We have the perspective that we're uniquely incompetent in this country, we're really screwing it up. But actually, it seems to be a more universal phenomenon post-pandemic. You read similar stories about Berlin, about Sydney, about the UK, about the US. So I'm not sure that we're doing something uniquely wrong here. But then, you know, to your point.
There's a policy of financialization of the housing market, yeah. is the where you're seeing it. So like when you look at the likes of Vienna, where they've avoided that model, mm. and they believe that housing is a right and that it should be affordable no matter what stage of your life you're at, and that they build for communities as well and right sizing so that people live in public housing can downsize and stay within their community. So they view housing very differently to the way that Ireland has gone down the road of inviting in private money. Housing is an asset. It's something that's going to constantly accumulate value. And that then has that corrosive effect on society. Although, do you know what I mean? That you then exclude people because at a point
for many people, their primary saving, their primary asset, their primary pension is the family home. And it's absolutely baked into their contract that this is going to go up in value permanently and be my store.
But you have to change that mindset.
I agree, yeah.
That mindset has to change. Otherwise, we won't be able to get the workers that are, you know, keeping the cafes going, nurses, teachers, guards,
children that have to move out of homeless accommodation in with Auntie whoever to do their junior cert and leaving cert. How could you buy into a society where your teenage years are defined by homeless accommodation, transient living, your parents struggling? What that does that do to a parent or a set of parents? And what does that do to the wider family structure? I think it's unforgivable at this stage.
That's Kate O'Connell, former Fine Gael TD. With me as well is Lynn Boylan, Sinn Féin MEP, Conor Faulkner, consultant with the RIAC, and John Cunningham, relationship manager, or director, I should say, of Morgan McKinley. Lot of reaction. In my view, we should have a minister for homelessness as opposed to a minister for housing. Focus the attention on the problem, which is not just housing, but the cost of it. Also with regard to NAMA, to what extent did NAMA contribute to the housing problem? Did they keep the cost of housing artificially high during the crash? To what extent did they draw in vulture funds to control the market and end up keeping the cost high? There should be an inquiry on the effectiveness of NAMA. Another, Anton, the appointment of a housing czar was nothing more than putting in an unaccountable bureaucratic layer to provide a buffer for the political class and senior civil servants. As regards the salary, it's outrageous and ridiculous. Another, is there any stuff getting done in this country? Any hospital or school with sufficient staff? Any area with sufficient homes? Any service without waiting lists? This country is bordering on non-functioning. A high-paid, non-functioning bureaucracy. One of the things they did then was analyse in the Ireland Thinks poll in the Sunday Independent, the salary issue of the housing czar proposed at 430-ish thousand, which would be Brendan McDonagh's current NAMA salary, and which I think is due to go down. People were asked what they thought the appropriate salary should be. 30% said under 100,000 euro. It's a long way from the 4 million you'd pay him, John.
But let me tell you, they're asking questions like this to the public, I think, is actually nonsensical in many respects, okay? To suggest that anybody would take on a job like this for under 100 grand is just not feasible, all right? The bottom line is, if you want to get the right people and the good people in to do these jobs, it's going to happen again, it's happening all the time now. The attracting brilliant people into public service has been a major problem, okay?
400 grand?
Hold on, but if he did the job for 400 grand and delivered what was needed, you think of what's going to happen now. They're going to end up spending 5, 10, 15, 20 million, bring in consultants to fill the gap. They'll get more reports. They'll spend money and it'll be all done discreetly, okay? If Brendan McDonagh or whoever it is has been, and then what's even worse today is that they're now looking at people in the civil service and they're kind of saying, well, your man's around 150 or 200, he'll be better. Yeah. I'm sorry, who's the best person? And if they don't stop comparing, you know, we've got to look at the market with regard to getting bright people in and good people in. So my view is I'd be very happy to pay him 400 grand if I thought he'd get the job done. We've just spoken about it now again, going down a rabbit hole. This has been going on for 20 years. We're talking about a crisis. I don't see it. There's a problem. If the civil service cannot get together and make it happen, if the willingness isn't there to break it and make it work, if this is going to make it work, I'm saying pay him the 450 grand and be done with it.
Lynn?
Again, I'm just thinking this is a distraction. Who heads up this body is missing the point that what does the body do? And that is getting the people around the table to unlock the blockages and to give them the emergency powers to do that. So you can second somebody in probably from the local authority, which would be better, to coordinate us. But the key thing is, what is it that we needed to do? And that's what the Housing Commission report called for. And it was that coordination of your utilities, of those who are building the houses, your housing association bodies, your local authorities around the table. One of the key things they could do, again, if it's in a crisis and an emergency, is the level of bureaucracy that local authorities have to go through to get funding from central government is ridiculous. That could absolutely be changed in the morning. They have a battle with the Department of Public Expenditure and local authorities, and it delays housing projects by years. So let local authorities, yes, you have to have accountability for the money, but let them build. Local authorities know how to build houses.
Well, the Ireland Thinks poll asked people, what do you believe are the principal blockages in relation to the progress in the issue of housing? One, 67%, planning permission issues. 46%, infrastructure, water, electricity and so forth. 43%, local authorities. 41%, government. And 40%-ish saying insufficient labour. Kate O'Connell, do you believe on those lists you've seen much in the way of improvement across those categories recently?
Well, there has been some moves to deal with the planning permission and the delays. I think one of the from talking to builders and people involved in development is when you keep moving goalposts, it stymies development. It stops when you change the aspect of an apartment block that delays things within the system. The planning permission is a big thing. The serial objectors is a big thing across the country, and they are making moves in that. But the infrastructure, the water, the electricity, back to the data centres, and availability of services. I mean, it was a key part of the I don't know how long ago it is now, the Simon Coveney plan, that there would be integration in the 30% social housing. And we've seen the fallout from mass development of housing estates with lack of public services. So there has been a move to avoid the problems of the past. But to go back to the salary, if he built 40,000 houses, sure, 400's only a tenner a house. You know, so I mean, if he did it on a commission basis and if he definitely did deliver it, I mean, it doesn't seem like bad value.
But the planning issue, a tenner a house, is overstated as well, because what's needed to fix the planning issues needs to be resourced. This is goes back again to resourcing those critical infrastructures. The local authorities need 500 new planners to be able to do their job and to deliver and to stop delays. On Bord Pleanála, or is it on whatever it's called now, needs 50 additional staff to be able to speed up the applications. And you need statutory timelines so that the builders again will know that this is the statutory timeline for decisions, and that brings down the cost of delivering houses as well.
Earlier on, Connor was making a point that suggested that one of the things that happens is people become frustrated in these kind of situations and it leads to a shift to the right. We're seeing that in UK politics following what happened with the by-elections and the county council elections and the rise of reform. We'll have a look at that after the break, as well as a look at the Leinster semi-final Camogie that almost didn't happen over the players' choice of outfits. By the way, I should say Lynn Boylan, MEP for Sinn Féin, John Cunningham, Relationship Director at Morgan McKinley, Kate O'Connell, former Fine Gael TD and pharmacist, and Conor Faulkner, consultant with the Royal Irish Automobile Club, are with me this morning. Lynn was making the point about local authorities needing 500 planners to try to work through the planning applications that are coming in. Where's all my taxpayers' money going? I'm in Galway. Roads and roundabouts are in a woeful state. Few cycle and bus lanes. Prom is filthy. City centre decaying. Where's all my taxes being spent? Angry, 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 says the text, in case you hadn't inferred that into what they were saying. Another, bring him on half the salary, but with a huge bonus if he delivers. I don't think anybody would argue against that.
Yeah.
My other half, says another text, is a structural engineer. He has many ways and ideas of how to sort the housing crisis, but it's not someone anybody ever asks people like him who actually understand where and what the actual issues are. Another, the local authorities can't even collect the bins, never mind build a house.
Well, that's privatisation for you.
And another, the red tape here has become ridiculous. It cost us 200k to put in a fire escape. No monetary return ever on investment. We had no choice. We had to replace a perfectly safe galvanised stairs with 10 grand of a new one because the new updated regs had changed by 10 millimetres, had to employ engineers, architects, fire consultants. What a scam. No wonder the cities and towns have nobody living above commercial premises. We have regulated ourselves into this situation. Regulate us the hell out of it, ASAP. Yeah. My brother has an empty apartment for 20 years as there's no secondary fire escape and therefore it'll be empty forever. 53106 at a cost of 30 cents if you want to get in touch, or 087 1400 106. We could spend the entire programme, I suspect, on this, given the reaction. Let us move to something else, which is this yesterday. Leinster semi-final, Camogie. Out goes Kilkenny and out goes Dublin to compete in their match. They are told by officials there, who are of course following the rules, that because they have decided to tog out in shorts, they have to go back in and change into skorts, or the game will not go ahead. Kate O'Connell, 2025, does this all make sense?
No, none of it makes sense. And I've yet to find out what the purpose of a skort is. I assume
femininity, I assume.
Well, isn't that what we're all trying to push back against in terms of equality in sport? It seems to have been a collective pushback when it came to both teams. They came out togged out in shorts, and they were right. And if the women's teams don't want to wear skorts and have frills running along the bottom of their bottoms, that is their choice, and I would support them in every way on that.
Yeah, and I agree. I think it's an absolute disgrace that the Camogie Association are blocking this. 83% of the players have voted. They want to do away with the skorts. They want to be able to wear shorts. They're saying it's a barrier for keeping girls in sport. And to have the association ignore the wishes of the people who play the sport, who generate the revenue for the Camogie and generate the interest in the sport, is an absolute disgrace. And it's just, again, it's a wider problem that people keep trying to police what women wear. Just let us wear what we want to wear.
And the argument that is being made, as I understand it, by a lot of the players, is that the difference is restriction of movement. They all say nobody trains in these things and they make it much more difficult to actually compete. The clip that we played earlier on from the Dublin defender, one of the points that Emma O'Byrne was making was that she said she spends about 30% of her time thinking about what she is wearing by virtue of being forced into skorts rather than thinking about the game.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. If 83% of the players want to wear shorts, they should be allowed to wear shorts. They're the ones who are going out onto the pitch and playing the game.
There's more to get caught up in. I mean, you're playing Camogie and there's a small ball and a big stick. I mean, you don't want a skirt in the way.
It makes no sense of any sort. Sometimes you hear something like this and I kind of try and be contrarian and say, okay, what were the officials thinking? Is there a way to look at this that, you know, they were in the right? But they're not. I mean, this is just a ridiculous, obvious thing. Just
the officials, of course, have to follow the rules, so it's not their fault, but nonetheless.
There are other kind of sports. If you consider the Irish rugby girls, I mean, they wanted to change the colour of the shorts from white to navy a couple of years back. And the immediate reaction was, OK, that makes sense. I see where you're coming from. No brainer. Do it. And I just cannot. I cannot for the life of me fathom what the difficulty is.
It's hard to imagine the same thing applying in a male sport. I can't imagine 30 guys being told the game won't go ahead unless you change
your outfit. Never happen. It would never, ever happen and would never be tolerated Kilkenny and Dublin hurlers would be sent in to change into a whatever. Would never happen.
Yeah. And it's short has to be a certain length.
Yeah,
or
it's
whatever.
Just ridiculous.
When I heard the story first, I assumed the row was going to be like about a sponsor logo or something like that. But this one is just
the drop off in girls in sport in their teenage years is huge. And if we want to keep girls, this is to do with being social, but it's also to do with taking part in society, but also like reaching their potential. We have to take out the things that have stopped them, such as white shorts, frilly things on their bottoms, whatever. Just move on from it. Support the women in the same. And I mentioned this before when we were waiting for the show. I attended the Ireland-England women's rugby match in the Six Nations down in Cork. My first cousin happens to be on the team. And even in terms of the facilities afforded to the girls, it's a great, Musgrave Park is great and we had a great day out. But in terms of the difference between, I saw Ireland and France, I was lucky enough in the Aviva, and, you know, just the difference.
Well, I mean,
the
it's
spectacle.
Not that long ago that we had the women's soccer players having to change in bathrooms and give the kiss back.
Yeah, women don't need.
So there is a huge
women
disparity.
We don't need any more barriers. Thank you very much.
It's Bank Holiday Sunday. This is a topic on the news, which is, first of all, it's outrageous. This has been bubbling for a while. So there are people within Camogie Ireland and within GAA who know this is an issue and have done nothing about it.
Yeah, sort
so that's
out.
The description. Sort what, it out.
And it's the easiest fix in the world.
Yeah. The point that Kate O'Connell made about the challenge in keeping young women in sport, particularly as they cross that 12, 13 age where there's a significant dropout. One of the people who has been campaigning about that is Anna Geary, herself, GAA All-Star. She's going to be with us a little bit after 11 o'clock, as will Kilkenny's cornerback, Michelle Tehan, from that game to give us their sense on it. So if you have any view between now and then, 53106 or 087 1400 106 on WhatsApp. We finish up with matters across the water. This, of course, relating to the recent election, wherein Nigel Farage he's writing the epitaph for the Conservative Party and saying effectively that Reform have stolen their clothes. Is he right?
Well, from the outside looking in, it looks like he's absolutely right. And I have to say, it's really kind of just extraordinary to see the destruction of the Conservative Party. And I think Kemi Badenoch is somebody who just looks like she is just a lame duck and making no impact and not assert. I mean, I've watched the Prime Minister's questions and it's just not working. And I don't know what's happening on the ground, but Farage has now gone from being 2 or 3 years ago a slight bit of a joke to being potentially the next Prime Minister of Great Britain. So it feels like...
Oh, is that possible?
Yes.
But I think it is possible. But I think, back to the point, where are they going to assert themselves? Farage is laughing at both sides of it. He can't believe what's happening. They're walking into it. They're comparing. So Conservatives went after Reform. Wrong argument. Okay, you know, you look at the Labour losing the votes to the Liberals. The whole thing's in a mess. But the Conservatives, for me at the moment, look like they're in demise. And if they don't do something kind of soon about it, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens.
Conor, Kate, you both think that the possibility of Nigel Farage, Prime Minister Farage, is real?
Well, if you'd asked me 5 years ago, would there ever be Boris Johnson as Prime Minister? That was laughable at the time. So yes, it is possible. And this is actually really serious. We see how vulnerable our democracies are. You could have Trump in the US, you could have Johnson or Farage. We know what's happening in Germany, possibly Italy, France. In our case, we're not insulated against this. We are perhaps a little bit blessed with our proportional representation system, so we have to be a little bit more collegiate. But one of the things I absolutely despise about all of the populists is this notion that all you have to do is say everything is crap. Just say everything is crap. Just never stop saying it. Keep that fire hose of BS turned on permanently, and eventually you'll undermine people's faith in. I mean, we were talking earlier on and one of our angry texters came in. Let me just state as an objective fact, Ireland is not a failed state. Yeah. Ireland is one of the most successful countries in the world. In my adult lifetime, we have transformed this little republic. We are prospering magnificently. And the problems that we have at the moment are the problems associated with success and prosperity. I remember what the 80s were like. And the thing that terrifies me is we could lose it all through the complacency that allows these BS merchants to just thrive and thrive.
Yeah, but I mean, if a group of people, and that includes the 15,000 people that are homeless and their families, if it's seen that government is not delivering for the public, Trump did it and tapped into people's fears. Farage is doing it, tapping into people's fears. And I do believe, to answer your question, if this is not pushed back against by the Conservatives, by the Lib Dems and by Labour, Farage will be the next Prime Minister of the UK. It was
now,
incredible yesterday.
We've seen UKIP do particularly well before. There have been moments where it looked like...
He seems to be able to reinvent himself, and he seems to be able to tap in, and maybe it's just it seems to be more sustained than just giving the government a kicking. He seems to be building and building, and you see that in the local election wins.
There's a couple of things going on. One, yes, it was a seismic result for Farage over the weekend, but also to put it in perspective, Reform have 676 seats in total, Labour have 6,170, the Tories have 4,500, the Lib Dems are 3,009. So a bit of perspective as well. Yeah. But I think what we're seeing play out in Britain is what we see play out across Europe as well, is that when Conservatives or parties of the centre-right adopt the language and the policies of the right, they get eaten for lunch, and that the people who move over and vote will then continue to vote for the authentic version of the right. And that's what we're seeing. So the Conservatives have pandered to Nigel Farage's message. Mm-hmm. The people aren't going to vote for the Conservatives. They're voting for Nigel Farage. They're voting for what they see now as the real thing.
Although when they pandered to it with great commitment, it was electorally successful for them. Boris Johnson was chief panderer and it worked very well.
But because they didn't deliver, so Nigel Farage is continuing to say, you didn't do what you said you were going to
and
do.
I will.
We will do it. So what you need is to give people hope. And that's where I cannot, for the life of me, understand what Keir Starmer's strategy is. You went in, you had a huge electoral success. And what are you doing as your first act in government? Cutting the fuel allowance for pensioners, cutting disability payments, the Labour Party. So the Labour Party needs to go in and do what the Labour Party should be doing, which is representing those working class communities that Nigel Farage is filling with fear. And it's not just working class communities, because a lot of wealthy individuals vote for the far right as well. But Labour needs to be giving those communities hope and the belief that the Labour Party will represent them. And if he's not going to do that, well, then the future doesn't look well. And that, let that be a lesson
it's
to
a warning
us in Ireland
us.
As well.
You will be interested to know that there seems to be, just judging, which of course is not necessarily representative because it is a specific demographic that listens to every show, but the general consensus in respect of what happened yesterday with that Kilkenny Dublin semi-final and the fact that it wasn't going to go ahead unless the outfits were changed, it is going down like a lead balloon from the text response that we're getting. Just before we wrap up, John, you wanted to mention you're a director of IMA. There's a gig coming up.
Bank Holiday weekend, Saturday and Sunday and Monday. IMA has four exhibitions. Art as Agency, Staying with the Trouble, Hammett Butt and The Kith and Kin. If you've nothing to do, up to IMA. Have a great afternoon, and it's for free.
John Cunningham, Relationship Director at Morgan McKinley, Kate O'Connell, former Fine Gael TD, Conor Faulkner, Consultant with the RIAC, and Lynn Boyle and Sinn Féin MEP. Guys, thank you all very much.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.